morning. Thank you for that warm welcome. There is a post that goes around on social media this time of year that really resonates with me and makes me feel seen. And this is what it says. Not to be dramatic, but the sun setting at 5 p.m. every day has ruined my life. Now, that is dramatic. It doesn't quite ruin my life, but I do go into a, like, hibernation mode. 6 p.m. rolls around, and it feels like 9 p.m., so it's just so easy to get into bed and turn on a movie and go to bed early. It's hard to do anything extra. So to counterbalance my tendency to hibernate, last winter, I joined a gym. I say that with hesitancy, only because I have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I really do enjoy being an active person when I can, and it helps my mental health. And in my limited experience of the gym, it always feels ironic to me that a place where so many people come to prioritize their health can feel so, for lack of a better word, kind of toxic. Not every day, but some days I go and the energy feels really intense, competitive, a little bit judgy, and there's always that one person who only has 20 minutes to work out, so they're gonna take all the dumbbells that they can, despite the fact that all these other people are waiting. And I noticed a few months ago that I started participating in this energy, like it was influencing me, and I caught myself being kind of judgy. And it snuck up on me because I fell into the common trap of justifying it because I was judging the judgers. So of course it's okay, just judging the judgers. So I spent some time sort of reflecting, how am I going to show up as my authentic self at the gym and who I want to be in this space with this energy? We're finishing a series this morning on the book of Romans. And what I just described, the challenge opportunity set before me at the gym, is a little bit like the challenge set before this community, followers of Jesus in Rome. The world around them is so divisive, hostile, and they're faced with questions like, how do we navigate these very real tensions in our community, conflict that comes up naturally because of diversity, and how do we pursue peace and justice, not just in the world around us for other people, but reflect it as a community? And if you haven't been able to follow with us through this series, I'm going to summarize some of the context of this book, so I'm sorry if it's a little bit repetitive, but it really is critical to understanding what this whole book is about. The book of Romans is a dense letter that this church planter, Paul, wrote in the first century to followers of Jesus living in Rome. And in the letter, Paul includes strong exhortations about unity and people worshiping God with one voice and one mind and peace. And so you can sort of logically deduce that, well, there must be an absence of unity. There must be an absence of peace. And there is. There's tension. There's division. Between followers of Jesus, he refers to specifically two groups of people in his letter, the strong and the weak. The strong, he uses this language to refer to a group of Gentiles, so these are non-Jewish folks who have converted to following the ways of Jesus. They were likely previously worshiping multiple gods, and he uses the language of the weak to refer to Jewish folks who have converted to following the way of Jesus. And there's disagreement between these two groups of people about what it means to follow Jesus. Like, how do we live that out? The Jewish folks continue to practice the law that God gave them, which has rules about what to eat and not to eat and the Sabbath. And the Gentile group of folks say, no, like, we don't need to follow those rules to follow Jesus. And when you think about it, this kind of conflict is almost to be expected. I mean, I'm sure you can bring to mind a conflict that you've had recently with a family member, a coworker, a friend, where you may have even had the same goal, but everybody has a different way of getting there, and everybody thinks that their way is right. The people laughing are like, but my way is right. But there's layers to this conflict and nuance to these labels that Paul assigns to these groups. On the one hand, the Jewish folks following Jesus are referred to as weak because it speaks to their weak view of grace. They're stringently adhering to rules. But these terms also speak to disparity in socioeconomic status. It's likely the strong are people of privilege, and they're assuming this kind of superior posture. They have a condescending or despising view of these Jewish followers of Jesus. And before this letter, there was a Roman Empire who came to power, who drove out Jewish folks from the land. They were forced to leave their home. And we know that this is the kind of experience that can impact people for generations. Not to mention, when they are able to come back, their land that was their land and their home that was their home is no longer theirs. Do you feel what's at stake in this conflict? It's not just different perspectives, but it's a conflict that touches on identity, security, pain, and trauma. And you can sort of see that while there's different perspectives, this tension in some ways is influenced and reinforced by the division that the Roman Empire is creating, the world around them. And Paul has the audacity to call them to unity. I mean, he even refers to it in his letter as a bold thing. So the question is, how? How do they navigate these very real tensions? How do they move towards each other? And just a quick disclaimer that Paul is not calling them to uniformity. He affirms diversity. He actually says on this specific issue, everyone should live by their own convictions. But how do we move towards each other in peace? So Brad began to unpack this question last week with chapter 14, and this week is like a part two. So before we dive into the passage, let me say a prayer for us. God, we're so grateful for the opportunity to gather together in your presence. We're so grateful for the wisdom that your word offers us. And I ask for myself and for all of us here, God, that you would come and speak, that you would give us wisdom, that you would soften our hearts, that you would encourage and lift us up, and give us boldness to walk towards peace. Pray these things in your name. Amen. So rather than read a very long passage to you, I'm going to just point out a few verses that I think identify specific instructions that Paul gives and emphasizes, although I do encourage you in your own time, it would be great to read chapter 14 and 15 to get the whole picture. So one thing that Paul mentions basically says, stop being judgy. Like, you want to pursue each other, stop being judgy, even if you're judging the judgers. He says, therefore, let's not judge one another anymore, but determine this, not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in a brother or sister's way. Now, I know this statement, don't judge, is sort of like the ultimate mic drop in our context, almost like an excuse to do whatever you want and then say, well, only God can judge me, like, boom. But that's not really what Paul is saying here. He's not saying that there's no need for confrontation or loving correction. That would make him a hypocrite. Like, that's what he's doing in this letter. I think the judgment that he's talking about assumes a kind of superiority. And this instruction flows from the notion that all of us at some point will be accountable to God. And when you are judging someone else and you're ruminating on someone else's behavior, there's an internal shift that can happen, a freedom you can find when you acknowledge that that person will have to give an account to God for their life. Even when our best accountability systems in our world often fall short, we all will give an account to God. So don't be judgy. Number two, Paul says, bear the weaknesses of others. He specifically says, we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength and not please ourselves. He doesn't say just put up with, acknowledge from a distance, smile while they're around and complain about how convenient it is when they're not around. He says, bear the weaknesses. And I think it's important to identify that in this specific instruction, emphasis is given to the strong bearing the weaknesses of the weak. And that's because in this context, as is much the case with our own, it's the weak that are often forced to submit to the strong. And here says Paul, no, Paul says, no, you're to be a community oriented toward the needs of the most vulnerable in community. If Paul were writing this letter today, I think it might sound something like, enter deeply into relationship with people. Know each other's names and stories. Work hard to see their perspective. Be willing to be misunderstood. Stand with each other and extend economic generosity. And the burdens placed on people because of injustice, bear up under those with them. So number two, bear the weaknesses of others. Number three, Paul says, welcome and accept others. In verse chapter 15, verse 7, he says, therefore accept one another. Now I know that in the Bay Area, this may not sound like that challenging of an instruction. And that's because maybe compared to other places in the world, we have a value of tolerance and inclusivity. And it has been my experience that that kind of acceptance and tolerance is always, in the end, very limiting. Because it quickly becomes, well, I will be inclusive and tolerant as long as your view of inclusive and tolerant is the same as mine. So it becomes excluding. But Paul, in this letter, doesn't say, therefore, accept one another as the Bay Area accepts people. He says, therefore, accept one another just as Christ has accepted us for the glory of God. Just as Christ has accepted us. How has Christ accepted us? How has Christ accepted you? A while ago, I read this book called Lest Innocent Blood Be Shed, and it's a book about this pastor, Andre Trocmé, and his wife. Through their leadership, this small village in France was able to save over 3,000 Jews during the Holocaust. One of the most striking parts of the story is when two French officers show up to arrest the pastor. They're French, but representing the Nazi regime. They don't have any proof of what the village is doing, but they know what's happening. So when they show up to arrest him, his wife invites them to sit down and have dinner. One of the officers, as this is happening, starts crying. Word quickly gets around in the village of what's happening, and all these people show up with gifts and to show the most honoring and dignifying goodbye for their pastor. And the officer starts crying again, moved to tears. Well, I'd like to tell you that they didn't arrest him. They still did. And he was eventually released. But what I found really interesting about this story is later, people asked his wife, like, how could you do this? How could you be so forgiving? How could you treat these people so decently? I think it carried both the tone of, we're so appalled, and also actually, like, how did you do this? And her response was something like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Forgiveness, decency. They're people. They were hungry. We were going to eat. We wanted to have dinner. They were just there. They were in the way. We all just sat down. I'm telling this story because this community somehow, remarkably, found a different way of being, an alternative way of living, a way of transcending the hostility and division in the world around them, and offered sustaining peace. They were remarkably different. These two points that Paul makes are so important. We are to welcome and accept others as Christ has accepted us. And how has Christ accepted us? It's a self-sacrificing, privilege-emptying, costly, humanizing, uncomfortable welcome. I think one of the questions hanging over Romans is like, whose table is it? Is it Caesar's table? Is it the imperial power's table? Or is this the table of Christ, where everyone's welcome, where there's transformation just as you sit down? And why are we to do this? Paul says, for the glory of God. Because we don't want to be like the gym, where all these people, ironically, are prioritizing their health, and yet the energy feels kind of toxic. We don't want to be a community of people who says we're pursuing justice and peace outside in the world, and yet that is not reflected here. So what does that say about God if we are his family? Now, I know that, as Brad mentioned last week with a kind of disclaimer, when we hear sermons like this, it can be easy to sort of bring to mind the most extreme example in our life and try to figure out how that applies. And I can't pretend to be able to speak to every circumstance and what's appropriate in every circumstance in one sermon. So rather than give specific instruction, I want to lead us through a time of reflection. But before we do that, let me say a prayer for us. God, we are thankful for the tangible reminder of what is possible. What is possible for us as we pursue unity and peace because you first welcomed us. That while we made ourselves enemies of you, your arms were wide open. And I pray right now that you would guide us in wisdom and discernment and knowing how to live that out and maybe just one next step. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. So you can actually keep your eyes closed. I'm going to invite you to bring to mind someone extended mercy to you when you did not deserve it. Or maybe when you felt like you were on the outside or misunderstood and someone welcomed you. What did that feel like? And if it feels authentic, you might express in your heart or your mind gratitude to God for this person, for his welcome of you. Now I ask you, is there someone who God is inviting you to move towards in love? Who is God inviting you to extend costly and radical welcome to? It might be the first person who comes to mind. Now ask God, is there anything he wants to tell you or show you about this person? You might ask God to show you his heart for this person. Now you can open your eyes. And we're first going to spend a few minutes. I think you all should have been given a piece of paper. Just writing a prayer for that person. So why don't you go ahead and do that, and then we'll come back together.